Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 131. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And we are here.
Hi.
We're here. I feel like we just spent almost 40 minutes chit-chatting before the episode, because we really only see each other once every 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
Which is weird after living with each other for like 8 years.
I think it's also like winter. Maybe once it's nicer out, we'll be more apt to... Hey, let's do fun things.
I'm getting, like, cabin fever. Like, I keep asking, like, can we just, like, go do something? Like, something new? I think part of it is I have, especially right now, because I'm on a book writing deadline, I have, like, a very regimented schedule. And so every day, everything is, like, almost exactly the same. It's like Groundhog Day. Like, it just keeps repeating itself. And I need some variation somewhere when I have downtime. And I'm like, we're going to go see the new Captain America movie tonight. Have you watched that yet?
We were supposed to go last week, but we ended up, it was because of the snow, we ended up canceling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're going eventually, but I don't know when.
Yeah. I have very mediocre hopes for it.
I think that's smart.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
Because I have not seen the greatest stuff about it, but I also have seen people who liked it.
The ratings were not as bad as I thought they were going to be. They're like in the mid to high 80s on Rotten Tomatoes, I think. So, like, audience score. So I was like, okay. I mean, that's honestly better than I thought it would end up being.
Right.
Anthony Mackie is everywhere right now, by the way. Like, I swear he has, like, 16 movies coming out, but good for him, because I like him.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, maybe we can go to dinner. Maybe we can go to dinner somewhere new. I just need some variation in my life right now.
Yeah. Alex, he kind of wants to go out and do more than I do. Mm. I'm like, I want to be home.
I like being home.
Staying at home. Like, it's home in my leggings and sweatpants. It's so much more comfortable than being not home.
Yeah.
But he keeps pushing, like, we were going to go do a nice meal.
Oh, you guys might hear Callie today. She is very needy right now.
Yeah, she needs all the love. But no, he's like, we were going to go do a nice meal on President's Day, and then we decided to stay home. We should still do a nice meal at some point. And I'm like, all right, fine. I always appreciate it once we're out and, like, doing things, but sometimes it takes a little bit of push.
That's, like, sometimes the push to, like, go do something. Like, I really wanted to see a movie yesterday, and Kevin was like, oh, well, maybe we'll see it today, Sunday. And I immediately was like, okay. Like, the excuse to get out of it was, like, immediate, even though I wanted to do it. Because it does. It takes effort.
It does.
To, like, get dressed and, like, be presentable, and then I feel like I have to put up these little mental barriers because I have really bad social anxiety to, like, go interact with the world.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I am looking forward to that. Should be good. We also just watched Companion. Have you seen?
I have not.
Commercials for that?
I've heard of it, yeah, but I have not seen it.
It is a horror movie, but honestly, not scary. Not a single jump scare.
That was kind of what the impression, because I know we've seen the trailer for it, and that's the impression I got, is like, it's a horror movie, but it's a horror movie because of, like, the intellectual goings on. Like, the thinking through what's actually happening is the scary part, not like...
It's more like a thriller than anything else, and even that, not a particularly, like, tense one, but it was surprisingly funny. Like, I thought it was gonna be kind of funny, but it was funnier than I thought it'd be. And definitely, like, really interesting from a woman's point of view to watch it.
Okay.
That is definitely an 18 and over movie, just...
Yes.
FYI.
In case anyone's curious.
Yes. But I actually really liked it. I could not stop picturing the main character. Like, the actress who played her was fantastic, but I was like, Anya Taylor-Joy would have also killed this. Like, and she kind of looks a little bit like her, and I feel like they styled her a little bit like her.
Yeah.
And I was like, she would have been fantastic. But the one who played her was also very good.
Yeah.
And Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows,
gotcha.
Harvey Guillen, he was fantastic. At one point, he was wearing a fishnet undershirt.
Nice.
And I mean, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know, I can't help you.
Really, truly. We've been watching a lot of SNL-related things because of the SNL 50.
I'm assuming you guys watched the 50?
We did.
I've seen clips, and it looked really good.
It was, for the most part. Like, really, really great. Yeah.
I do want to check it out.
Had some weird moments, but those things always do.
Yeah.
but no, I liked how they handled a lot of it. They did a special for the 40th anniversary, which was just 10 years ago. And so, for the 40th, they did, like, the whole, I forget who played, but it was, like, have an instrumental musician come in and play a sad song while they do, here's all the people that have passed, kind of memorial reel, whatever. They did that at the 40th, and it was nice to kind of see everyone and to get an idea of everyone that had passed. Callie's making herself heard today.
Yes.
But they didn't really do that in the 50th. They decided to kind of do, like, a joke roll version of, like, they did basically of all the skits that are things that we would not do now. Like, all the racist skits.
Oh.
And, like, they kind of did a memorial for all those characters that they really should not, you know, should not be revived. Or things that you did back then that weren't something we think about now as, you know, it's not acceptable now.
Yeah.
But back then it was like, it was just a thing.
Yeah.
And they did it, and they did, you know, you don't think twice about it. But yeah, so like, I really honestly liked that because you did get to see some of the older, you know, the older cast members that have passed, because a lot of those characters were from the first few seasons, or, you know, they were older cast members because these were characters way back when. So honestly, I really liked that. A lot of people were really pissed about that, and I was like, it's only been 10 years. They've lost very few additional former cast members in that time. There haven't been that many that have passed in the last 10. So it's like, to be honest, they didn't need to do it again. Like, they just did it for the 40th. So I was glad they kind of came up with something a little fresh, and they did a good job of doing a lot of, like, montage roles of former characters. Like, they do, you know, a little role of all the characters that do this, like, you know, like certain things. So they grouped them together, so you got a lot of footage from times gone by.
Right.
But yeah, no, and then after the 50th, there's a 4-part documentary about, like, it's in 4 parts. The 4 parts are, like, there's an episode all about the writers. There's one about the lost season, which was 1985.
Oh.
Where they thought they were getting canceled. Lauren came back because he had initially left the show.
Oh, okay.
In, like, 81 or something.
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, Lauren left the show. They did fine for a couple of years, and then he came back because their season, I think it was season 10 did well, but not really well. So they were on the bubble for cancellation, and they, for season 11, like, recast the entire cast, and it was very strange. Like, watching this episode about it was insane because some of the stuff they did that season was, like, wackadoo. But yeah, so there's, like, that. There's an entire episode about the cowbell sketch, sketch.
Yeah.
Which is iconic.
There's a whole episode about that?
Just about that sketch.
Wow.
Because Will Ferrell wrote it, and the writing of it was a whole process because, like, getting inspired to write this sketch and then how that sketch failed, like, 3 or 4 times to make it into the show before it finally did with the right host, because you had to have Walk in there to really make it
sing. Really did.
So it's like, you know, they tried it with previous hosts, like, they thought maybe this one will work, and it just didn't. And then finally everything came together, and it is now one of the most iconic sketches from SNL.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, like, there's a lot of stuff kind of sort. There's a music one, too.
So I was going to say, that was 3, right?
Oh, the auditions. It was the first episode.
Oh, okay.
The first episode was all about auditions and everyone who's made the show, and they had so much footage of auditions from season 1 to season 50.
That's, like, awesome.
Yeah, so you got to see these people, what they did to try and get on the show, and it's really funny.
A clip on TikTok of one of the, I don't know if she was, maybe she was like the casting director or a producer or something, and she was basically like, you know, the people who didn't make it as, like, actual cast members, went, some of them went on to be even bigger than some of the ones who did were regulars.
They had footage of a lot of people who tried out for SNL, did not make it,
yeah,
and then went on to be some of the biggest stars. I'm trying to think of anyone at the moment.
You look like the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah, Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes, yeah, she was the one that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, but there are so many, like, Kevin Hart tried out.
Wow.
Like, so many comedic actors who've been very successful. Mindy Kaling tried out, like, you know. Lots of them tried out for SNL at one point or another and just didn't make the cut. It takes a very specific skill set to be good at SNL. Mm-hmm. It's not improv. They keep talking about how, like, in an entire season, there's maybe three lines that are improv the entire season. It's all written out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they read cue cards so much. Like, it's all that. But you have to have the skills to pick up on when someone is just so lost that they can't grab that line. Like, it's, yeah, it's not improv, but it's like, sketch comedy is very specific.
It still keeps you on your toes a lot of the same ways.
It's its own skill, and so you really have to have people who are dedicated to making that work.
Yeah.
Which is why Kenan's been there for 22 years or something, something like that. But yeah, there's also a music documentary based on, like, the music of SNL.
Oh.
And I think there's, like, one more after that that, Alex wants to catch up on. So, yeah. And then when we eat dinner, we usually turn on a show kind of like, we used to watch Shark Tank.
Oh, okay.
Because we want something that's like low stakes and we don't have to pay attention and you just kind of eat and let it play in the background kind of thing. Well, we finished all 16 seasons of Shark Tank.
Wow.
In like a year and a half because we started it at Disney last year.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. So, like, it took us, like, a year, but we watched all 16 seasons, so now we're trying to figure out what our next show is going to be. And we're thinking about starting at season one of SNL, and, like...
He's seen them all, though, right?
He's seen most of them. I don't know if he's seen all the old ones, but he's seen everything since he was in high school, I would imagine. Yeah. He's always loved SNL.
I feel like that would be such a cool, like... like walk through time to be able to do something like that.
Because it's also topical.
Yeah, exactly. We also like watching things while we eat dinner. Usually, like, kind of low stakes or like a half hour comedy sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right now we're watching. I'm terrible at watching TV shows because I get really stressed and overwhelmed because it's like, oh, yes, this show is only half hour long, but there's 15 seasons. And, like, I feel he's fine to, like, scroll on his phone and have it kind of play in the background and have pay attention. I am all
That's
or
me.
Nothing. I'm, like, I have to be zeroed in and paying attention or, like, I'm not watching it. It's just how my brain works. So I get kind of overwhelmed with TV shows. But we are currently watching Harley Quinn, which is on its fifth season. Fantastic show. Love it. Also 18 plus. We're also watching Common Side Effects, which is a new show on Max. And the only reason why I wanted to watch it is because it's about mushrooms.
Ah.
It's about this guy who finds this super rare, like, legendary mushroom. And he crashes. And, like, according to the legends, it can, like, heal any...
Affliction,
anything. And so he is, like, trying to escape Peru, I think, or somewhere like that. I don't remember exactly where they were. And they, like, the bad guys shoot his plane down, so he eats this mushroom, and he wakes up totally fine. And the rest of the show so far has been him basically trying to get away from the people who don't want, like, big pharma, who doesn't want this out in the world because then they can't make money because then nobody will be sick.
Right.
And they're trying to, like, kill him, and he's trying to get away from them. And also now he's trying to, like, replicate the conditions in which it grew to try to grow more.
Right.
And it looked like it was going to be a comedy, and it is funny, but it's, like, very... kind of dry, dark humor.
Okay.
But I like it. And I was kind of surprised by that. And then Mythic Quest also came back.
Oh, yes.
Which I am delighted by because I love that show. So we're also watching that.
I mean, we watch tons and tons and tons of TV because we're big TV buffs. I am a major Rookie fan. I love the Rookie on ABC.
Yeah.
That's
still going on?
Oh my gosh, that show is so good. Yes. It's on season 7.
Wow.
This season,
I remember
season
when
7.
It started.
It didn't air in the fall, so it just came back in January. Okay. And so I think it's going to air through all like 15 to 18 episodes.
Hi. Really?
I think it's going to air through all 15 to 18 episodes in a row, like all the way through.
Yeah.
But we also started, there's a new show called High Potential, and it's got
yes.
the girl from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah.
That show is so good. If you like procedurals at all, if you find them at all interesting, because
mm-hmm.
it is a procedural, like they do have cases every week. She's
mm-hmm.
not a detective, but she's got like a brain that holds information like constantly. She remembers everything and has, it's not necessarily photographic, but like she just takes in all this information and can store it all in her brain. And so she helps out the cops. At first it's just because she's gets hired as a cleaning lady and like overnight solves a case for them on the board, and they're all just like, who did this?
Yeah.
And so then she kind of slowly makes her way into the team. The first season just ended. I absolutely loved it.
That's good to know,
yeah.
because Kevin's a huge Always Sunny fan, and like I love Rob, and her and Rob are married.
Yes.
And like because Rob is in Mythic Quest, he also with Ryan Reynolds does the Wrexham stuff.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of always on the lookout for like what those four are doing.
Yeah.
The Blackberry film that the guy who plays Dennis did was very good.
We watched that too.
Way
yeah,
better
really
than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
He was fantastic in it. And yeah, so we've seen commercials for High Potential, and he was like, it could either be really good or really bad. And we've been hearing good things about it. So
yeah, so
I
far,
like
big fans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How funny is it? Like, is it like,
she's hilarious.
Because she usually does really ridiculous roles.
Yeah, she's hilarious. In addition to all the, like, episodic stuff,
mm-hmm.
there's also a through line. Like, her, I wouldn't say first husband, but the father of her first child disappeared.
Oh.
And she then moved on and had two more kids with Taron Killam from SNL.
Oh.
You'd know his face if you saw him. But, like, she had two more kids with that character, and so he's around. But there's a kind of a central mystery of what happened to this first guy, this first love of her life, because they didn't break up or whatever.
Mm.
He disappeared.
Yeah.
And basically, I think they assumed he was dead, but, like, there's definitely more going on, and she wants to know what happened. So, like, that's kind of also floating through the whole season, and I think they're going to dig in deeper when we get into season 2, because they kind of left it on a cliffhanger, of course. But,
yeah.
Yeah, such a good show. So good. Really, really enjoying that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. We talked about TV for a long time, which is totally fine.
Let us know what you're watching.
Yeah. You can contact us at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to message us about TV, SNL, movies you're going to see, books you're reading, Percy Jackson, all of the things. We
yeah.
love hearing from you.
All of it. Okay, so we have basically one bit of news, and then Karen has a special post that she wants to talk about. But there was an article that came out from Deadline talking about basically the best streaming and non-streaming like series of the year, and like talking all about closing out 2024, what the TV landscape looked like. And at the very bottom of the article, there is a lovely little bit about how Percy Jackson and the Olympians was the top dog show on Disney Plus last year.
I mean,
it outpaced even, like, Agatha. It outpaced all the Star Wars stuff, because Acolyte was last year, mm-hmm. as well as at least one other Star Wars show, because I swear there were two that came out last year. But yeah, it was the number one viewed show, and the with over 3 billion minutes viewed.
Wow.
Apparently, well, it says 3B minutes viewed. I'm assuming it's got to be billion.
Yeah.
Because
I would imagine.
You know, that would be weird if it was anything else. And then The Acolyte came in second place with 2.7 billion. So,
okay.
It's a sizable lead.
Yeah.
Like, they've done very well for themselves, which that just makes me really, really happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes the inevitability of season 3 or 4 feel that much more likely.
Yeah.
If it's landing that well, if families are finding the show and enjoying it and watching it, and you know, that's what we want. So
definitely,
it's good news.
Yeah,
it's
gay. I love that.
And then our only other bit of news for today, Karen, you may have seen on Instagram, she put up some stuff about upcoming RRP authors. So I figured I would throw it to her to talk about that.
Yeah, I knew A Touch of Blood by Sachini Patel was coming out soon, and that does come out February 25th. So by the time this episode comes out, that book will be out. You should go pick it up. It's the A Drop of Venom sequel/companion novel. It's like a different story altogether, but set in the same universe. Mm-hmm. And then I also saw and got really excited by the fact that Taylor K. Mejia's Lucha of the Night Forest sequel came out, and I was like, I forgot there even was going to be a sequel for that book. I'm pretty sure when Lucha of the Night Forest came out, that was my favorite book of that year, because it was so good. I originally picked it up because I love mushrooms, and I knew there was mushrooms in it, and I was really into, like, sentient forests at that time. And this had both of them, and it just ended up being really fantastic. Taylor is an incredible writer. And so Lucha of the Forgotten Spring is the end of this duology. So it's just these two books that just came out. That's available now. And I was like, okay, I think I'm going to gather all of these, like, recent releases and upcoming releases from the Rick Riordan Presents authors. Not all of them are... Actually, I don't... Other than A Touch of Blood, I'm not sure any of these are RRP books specifically. They're just books that RRP authors are writing probably for other, like, publishing houses.
Yeah.
And so I thought it would be a good idea to gather them up. And there were a handful of them. So Lucha of the Forgotten Spring by Taylor K. Mejia is available now. The Sinister Sisters and Other Terrifying Tales is also available now. That is a horror graphic novel for kids, middle grade level. And it's an Are You Afraid of the Dark, like, story. Like, I think it's in that line of books or whatever, IP. And that... I think there are 3 stories written in that graphic novel, and one of the stories is Rosanne Brown's.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be very cool. And then, like I said, A Touch of Blood by Sachini Patel comes out February 25th. And then The Anatomy of Magic by J.C. Cervantes, comes out March 11th. That's the sequel to... The Enchanted Hacienda, which was her adult romance book that I really loved. Like, she basically described it as Encanto for adults, and it has a lot of similar themes. And so I'm really excited to check this one out at some point. Mm-hmm. I have so many books to read.
Yeah.
And then The Storm Singer by Sarwat Chadha comes out April 15th. That looks very cool, and I saw him kind of writing about it, and basically I think he channeled a lot of his anger and frustration about the current political climate into this book, and I am very excited because he has such a, like, fantastic, like, very vivid mind, and also is really good at driving home some of those, like, really important messages, so I'm really excited to see how this one turns out.
Definitely.
And then, of course, we have Gracie Kim's The Dream Slinger, which comes out April 29th. And I am super, super excited about that as well. And last time I talked about, like, the freebies that you could get and sign up for. I got them, by the way.
Oh, did you? I think I forgot to sign up. So,
Available. You can check out mine. I was very excited to get them. It came all the way from New Zealand, which was really exciting. And it was just a cute little amalgamation. Like, you get the first 6 chapters of the book, and then you get, like, the Pokemon-type cards for the different animals and a little explanation of, like, how the world works. And, you get a sticker and a signed little, like, basically like a book plate that you can stick in the book, which I thought was really cool. So that was just fun.
The envelope alone is really cool.
I know. I was like, I don't want to throw it away.
Yeah. No, that's all really neat.
Yeah. So I'll probably post that on Instagram early next week so that you guys can see it if you didn't get to sign up for it yourself. But, yeah, it was really exciting, and I can't wait for that book to come out.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I was going to say, and that pretty much wraps up the news, so we'll get to move into our discussion of Chalice of the Gods, chapters 32 and 33.
Yes, we are so close to the end now.
So close.
And I feel like you can tell, like, these are good little, like, wrap-up chapters, and it's kind of, like, leading toward, we're really winding down at this point. Chalice of the Gods, chapter 32, Grover Eats My Leftovers, was a nice little chapter. It's, you know, basically the events following brunch mm-hmm. with the gods. And Percy can't decide. I love the opening of this chapter because Percy can't decide if he's more upset that the gods treat their kids like pets or that Poseidon never brought him any leftovers. And that is a real conundrum. I can kind of see where he's coming from with that.
I mean, he talks about, like, the nymph that, like, packed him the demi bag or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
Like, packed it full of, like, sweets and stuff. So, yeah, I can see why he'd be a little upset. Like, excuse me, this was, like, free food and it's really yeah. good. Like,
free food from Mount Olympus?
That's like, what I'm saying.
Yeah, if it's good enough for the gods, like, right. you know that's delicious.
Like, how are you not taking the leftovers and just, like, handing it to Camp Half-Blood.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Come on. Like, if there's leftovers. Now, granted, feed the people. So if there's people in Olympus who want the food or whatever, that's fine. But, like, at some point,
yeah.
drop something off to your kid. Come on.
Percy escapes from Mount Olympus without any further incident and gladly takes off Annabeth's cap. He's, you know, still talking about how it makes him really uncomfortable, and there's a lot of relief in taking that off. He specifically says he's not going to mention what happened with this whole brunch thing to anyone at camp, which to me was a very obvious, like, that's why you've never heard this story before kind of thing. But, like, I also kind of appreciated Rick, like, putting that in there explicitly.
Yeah, because, I mean, you do think that's like, oh, well, I've been to one of Zeus's brunches. He didn't know I was there, but I've been there. You
yeah.
know, like, it's kind of a little bit of a bragging opportunity.
Yeah.
If you want it. Percy's like, I don't want anyone
yeah.
about this. So, yeah, it's a fun little added thing. Like, yep, here's the reason why I'm not telling anyone.
Yeah. Grover is waiting for him with his little hula hoop when he's out of the Empire State Building, and he is super happy to see Percy and his pastries. He immediately goes for the pastries, which I can't blame him.
It's Grover. We expect this.
Yeah. And then we get a really beautiful moment between the two of them because Grover says the most scared he's ever been was when he was stuck in that cave with Polyphemus, and the second time he was the most scared in his life was seeing Percy wrestle Gary. And he really thought that he was going to lose his best friend. And that was just, like, mm-hmm. I loved that Grover was, like, so open about that and, like, made sure to tell him, like, I was really scared for you, and, like, if something had happened to you, like, I was really gonna miss you. It was gonna devastate me.
Because they've been through some stuff, so for this to stand out and for it to really, you know, mark Grover and be like, this was the second time in my life that I've been as scared as that.
Yeah.
Like, that's saying something.
It really is. And I think the big thing was that Grover felt really helpless because he literally couldn't do anything to help Percy, but Percy says the daydream of all of them being old together was the only reason he beat the god. And I think that really, like, sits with Grover and makes him feel like him just being a part of Percy's life is part of the reason why Percy was able to do this. But my favorite part was that Grover was super concerned with two details. One, the fact that he had white ear hair. And two, that they were having enchiladas for lunch. Which is just so Grover to
it
be
is.
Concerned about those things.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. And it was a very sweet moment between the two of them standing on the street corner.
Yeah.
In the middle of Manhattan.
Like, yeah.
It's, yeah. But I'm glad we got this little, bit of conversation mm-hmm. between the two of them, because I don't know what's going to happen in, like, the final chapter here, but, like, if this is the last time we talk to Grover in this book, it's nice to kind of leave off with Percy and Grover having a moment and, you know, just kind of appreciating that we made it through another one and we're both here and, you know, good work.
Yeah, I loved that. And Grover really does him a solid because he says that he'll return Annabeth's hat to her while Percy gets back to school, gets back to classes at alternative high school. And I don't know why, but that little detail just, like, I really loved it. Because we know Annabeth left to go to her classes because she wasn't going to miss those. But Percy, of course, you know, he's kind of in charge of this mission. It's his recommendation letter that he has to get. And so he has to go do this, hand over the Chalice of the Gods, and he was like, man, I gotta go give this back to Annabeth, I'm gonna miss more classes. And Grover's like, nah, I'll do it, like, no big deal. And Grover, of course, is, you know, older than them and doesn't have to go to high school, and so he has the time.
I also love how Percy was a little bit torn, like, I could give it to Grover and let him take it to her, or I could miss more class.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't want to miss class because he wants to get through high school. He wants to do well, like, you can tell. But at the same time, it's like, but also, I could just miss class.
Right.
I'm not sure how I want this. You know, it was very nice of Grover, though, to take that and let him get back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, ultimately, that was the right decision. And I think Percy was grateful that he wasn't going to have to miss any more classes, because that could put him behind.
Yeah.
We get a good description of what the alternative high school looks like, kind of what the vibe is and all of that. And when he walks in, he is ready to give plenty of excuses as to why he's late to the secretary. But it turns out, Poseidon is on the phone with the secretary explaining everything.
Poseidon and Margaret are on first name basis.
Yes, they are.
So weird.
It was really shocking both to Percy and to us, I think. Yeah. I mean, was not expecting. Percy's really good at kind of, like, getting out of scrapes and situations and stuff like that. And, like, you know, if he has to deal with the consequences of his actions living his demigod life, like, he kind of, that's par for the course for him.
Right.
So it's not that big of a deal.
He's accepted that a few times it's gonna mess up mortal things, and you just have to take it on the, you know, take it on the chin and keep moving.
Right. And in this case, he didn't have to. And also, his quiz got rescheduled. I mean, Percy Jackson is not used to this level of luck whatsoever. Right. Usually it's the opposite of, like, that quiz would have been 50% of his grade, and now he's failed. Right, you know?
That's usually how this goes.
Yeah. But I loved that Percy's first reaction to your father is on the phone was to think of Paul.
I was trying to think of who could have possibly called the school on Percy's behalf, who had some idea of what was going on. And at first, Poseidon was the last person I thought of. Like, I figured, my first thought was kind of Paul. Like, did Paul somehow know that this was going on this morning? And he just said, you know what, I'm just gonna call in and help him out. I'm gonna let them know, you know. My first thought was Paul, but then it also ran through my head. It was like, maybe it's Chiron? Like, maybe Grover reached out to Chiron and said, hey, Percy had to miss because of this, this, and this. Any chance you can just call and pretend to be his dad and say, you know. So I thought of Chiron. I thought of Grover. I was like, maybe Grover, on the way to drop off Annabeth's hat, thought, Percy could probably use a solid. Like, I'll pick up a payphone and call and pretend to be his dad. You know, affect his voice a little or something. You know, I thought of anybody besides Poseidon.
Yeah.
So when she actually said it's your dad and he picks up the phone and it's Poseidon, I was definitely shocked.
Yeah. Ganymede even, like, went through my head at one point because I was like, I don't know, maybe he realized giving him a blank piece of paper was kind of crappy. And so he's like, I'll just do him this one little thing and, like, you know, flirt with this secretary
it's
or something.
It's totally plausible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. Poseidon was, like, the last one on our minds.
Yeah. But it is really cute that Percy thinks of Paul first. Like, it's so, because he does think of him as his dad. Like, Poseidon is dad, but, like, Paul is dad. He's not his dad, but he is, and I like that.
I mean, to be fair, Percy's probably bonded with Paul in the, like, what, 2 years that he's known him, more than he's bonded with Poseidon his entire 16 years of life.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. So I can understand Paul being his first thought.
So cute.
Percy is very suspicious of Poseidon being on a first name basis with the secretary, which don't blame him.
Yep.
I would be too, because, you know, the gods flirting with mortals usually ends up with consequences. And sometimes those consequences are
children.
Named Percy Jackson. he's also suspicious and maybe a little frustrated about Poseidon deciding to help with such a small thing as him being late to school. But then this led to, I think, one of the greatest speeches, maybe in all of Percy Jackson, definitely by the gods.
Mm-hmm.
And Poseidon basically explains that he saw Percy as more of a hero today than ever before because he created what he called a small wave, which is more powerful than a lot of people would think. Percy wasn't trying to save the world by doing what he did, turning in the chalice. He just decided to do right by a single person, that single person being Gary. And Ganymede in a way, but he specifically mentions Gary because Percy could have kept the chalice. Percy could have just handed the chalice, let Gary keep the chalice, but he made a promise. And he decided, because I made a promise, I have to abide that by that promise. And I really kind of got this, what Poseidon was trying to say, because I think a lot of people, if you were like, you have the ability to save the world. All you have to do is this one thing. And it was totally within your power to do that one thing. I think a lot of people would do that thing, mm-hmm. you know? Like, I mean, yeah. It's saving the world. It's saving humanity. Like, that's kind of not a hard choice.
Right.
But whether or not to break a promise to a single person, especially when it could lead to your death or, you know, something very bad, that's a little bit easier to just be like, oh, well, like, I don't think I'm going to do it, you know?
Well, and we talked at length about how Percy could have just said, I'm out. Like, mm-hmm. this is done. Like, I don't need to get into all of this. Like, I will get my letter from Gary, who's right here, who I know how to make happy. I can do that really easy. I don't need to fight him just to make Ganymede's life better. Like, he could have just stepped away. And so, yeah, I agree. It's a really lovely speech talking about how sometimes being, you know, fixing something for one person, doing what you can to help one person is, you know, it's the bigger thing. It's, you know, the stakes aren't that high for you, but for Ganymede, the stakes were insanely high because mm-hmm. he didn't want the wrath of Zeus, and, you know, Percy wasn't directly going to, you know, feel that same wrath, but he made a promise to Ganymede that he was going to do this, so he stuck to his word, and that it is. It's really remarkable, and it shows just how much integrity Percy has.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think the difference is, like, this feeling of obligation to, like, save the world and do the big thing and be the huge hero versus something that, like, in all honesty, not a lot of people are going to know about what happened
right
today. And the fact that Percy did it without that many witnesses, I think you're right, talks a lot more about his integrity and is almost a bigger deal than if the whole world's watching, you save humanity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like if you're the only one who knows about some, you know, which choice you're going to make doing something, you're the only person who knows, you're the only person, you know, who's going to have any knowledge of it. If you make the right decision, people can be helped. If you make the wrong one, no one will know it's you. It takes integrity, it takes character to make the right decision in those instances, because if you can get away with not doing something, sometimes it's easier to just let yourself off the hook and mm-hmm. say, no one's gonna know it was me, it's not gonna change anyone's life, I'm just not gonna do it. Whereas if you have the opportunity to make someone else's life much better, if you just do this one thing, like, it's it can be huge.
Yeah, and, it really can.
It's nice to get something so small. We're so used to Percy Jackson books being, you know, life-altering that this story and this kind of story gives us a chance mm-hmm. to have small moments like this where we highlight sometimes just doing a nice thing for one other person is the way to change everything.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to talk more about that in the next chapter, because I felt like the next chapter also kind of highlighted that a lot. But the last bit in this chapter was Percy asks Poseidon if Ellison can do a yoga class at his palace sometime, which is really nice that, like, he asked on Ellison's behalf, especially after all of the heartbreak that he put Ellison through. But the hilarious thing to me was the secretary was right there the whole time. I mean, she was standing there being like, can you hurry up? I need my phone back. She heard him say he went to brunch. Not that, you know, because we don't know what Poseidon said that Percy did, right. I don't think. So he admitted to going to brunch instead of classes and also mentioned his dad's palace. Like, that's got to be kind of weird for this, like, random mortal secretary to listen to.
Unless there was some, you know, demigod missed hijinks going maybe. On that maybe she didn't hear palace, she meant dad's house, and you know, like, maybe there was some misting going on at that time, but you know, it is a good point.
Yes, that would actually make the most sense to me. That didn't even occur to me. I thought maybe like Poseidon had some like phone magic or something like that. But I think the mist is a better explanation. So, for favorite lines, mine was from Grover when he said, nothing is scarier than watching your friend struggle and not being able to help. Because that moment between them was just so poignant.
It was, yeah.
What was yours?
Mine is from Percy, and he says, unlike Lucius, the goddess of wisdom couldn't be pacified by a scratch behind the ear. Or at least, I wasn't going to be the first one to try.
Yeah. That would probably not end well for him.
It's just funny thinking of him scratching Athena behind the ear.
Yes. She would smite him on the spot.
Maimed.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. My favorite moment was Poseidon's speech about small waves and understanding who Percy is as a person. Because that's the other part that we didn't really talk about, was like Poseidon really saw Percy. I mean, I think he's seen Percy in a lot of other ways at other times, but there was like a genuine connection between them during this phone call, which does not always happen. And it's just really nice to know that this god, who has so much more going on in the world, can really understand his son, even when they don't have like the best of relationships.
And Poseidon kind of tells Percy, like, I keep an eye on you.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not always paying 100% attention. Don't worry, I'm not watching you. Yeah. But, like, he keeps tabs on Percy. He likes to know what's going on. So even when Percy isn't telling anyone about this whole chalice debacle, his dad still knows. And I think that's really nice that Poseidon is keeping tabs.
Yeah.
You know, just in case.
Yeah.
You never know.
What was your favorite moment?
I really liked all the details about Percy getting out of Olympus. Like, it just, the detail of, like, the demi bag or whatever he was talking about. And then, like, talking about how he was able to get by, you know, no one in the street accosted him, asking for Annabeth's autograph. Like, all the details of that, him getting to the Empire State Building and, like, dropping the pass and sneaking out and, like, I really loved that whole thing. Because he could have, you know, the story could have just jumped to Empire State Building, you know, I snuck down, dropped the pass, and left. Like, we could have just skipped all of that. But it was just some nice added detail to give you a picture of exactly what Percy was dealing with getting out of Olympus.
Yeah.
Not just getting into trouble, getting out of it and back to safety is
And on the flip side of that, so many more things could have gone wrong that might have extended this story if it had been a regular story in the series, that we didn't really need more angst, we didn't need more conflict or anything. Like, it was pretty much over at this point. So, I kind of like that it was a little bit of smooth sailing. And that's how I felt about these two chapters, was it was like a little bit of a wrap-up, a little bit of, like, balm after the tension of the brunch and everything. And I appreciated the way that Rick kind of, like, brought us back down from that moment.
Agreed.
So, chapter 33, One More Jolly Rancher for Old Time's Sake, starts off with Eudora, our favorite counselor, least favorite counselor, stopping Percy on his way to class to ask about his adventures. And he kind of explains to her what's going on, what happened, and she is momentarily very scared of Poseidon, the fact that Percy was talking to Poseidon. And that he, Poseidon, took time out of his day to do that when, like, she could have done, you know, stuff.
Right.
And Percy reassures her that everything worked out great and everything's fine. And this was so funny to me because Percy is not usually one for, like, super positivity. Like, he is very self-deprecating, kind of cynical in a lot of ways. And the fact that he was like, actually, my phone call with my dad was great. Like, I just love that change in attitude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She looks at the paper that the blank piece of paper that Ganymede gave Percy, and she is very impressed with the quality of the paper, which I just love that they went into so much detail about it.
Like, it is a blank piece of paper from Ganymede. It's fancy paper from Ganymede, but, like, it cracked me up that she was not at all shocked that it was blank. Like, she did not at all, at any point, that Percy's saying, like, it's, you know, it's not, it's just a blank piece of paper that I have to write it on.
A do-it-yourself recommendation letter, I think that's what he calls it.
Yeah, but, like, she's never at all shocked that that's how this wrapped up. Mm-hmm. Like, we've been talking about a letter the whole time, not just a piece of paper the letter goes on. Like, if I were Percy, I'd be so much more annoyed.
Yeah. But, I mean, it makes sense because she also expects him to talk about her in his letter of recommendation and, like, is obviously hinting at, you don't have to go into a ton of detail, but, like, you know you're going to mention me. And he's like, that never even crossed my mind, actually.
Not so much. I don't really like being flushed.
He's smart enough not to say that out loud. And, yeah, he is so mad, still so bitter about being flushed, and is so careful to avoid that happening again, which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. He grabs himself a blue Jolly Rancher on the way out the door, and he also talks about the fact that he actually enjoyed being in English class. It was probably a good reprieve from everything that he had to do over the last few days. And even though he didn't read the short story, he learned a lot about bravery, initiative, and self-discovery. So he figured he could probably bluff his way through it. And as somebody who's always done their homework and never bluffed their way through an essay, especially in English class, but is currently dating a person who has done that many times, this made me angry.
As the resident procrastinator and someone who, if I could get away with it, would skip things, I can tell you there were many times where I did not do the reading.
Really?
I always intended to do the reading. I took the book home. I had, you know, the best plans. There were definitely times when I did not, and I just sunk down in the seat and tried not to make eye contact with the teacher. And a lot of times it worked out. You know, as long as I had enough people in that class who did it every time and were willing to keep the conversation going, you're usually fine. I will admit to probably once or twice getting called out and not having the answer and being in trouble for it. But, like, minor trouble, like a stern look, not, like, got detention. But no, I always liked to do the homework and do all the reading. I just, there were occasions where it just did not happen for me.
Yeah. So were you also moonlighting as a demigod and had to go on quests?
I mean, no, but that would have been interesting.
It would have been a good excuse.
I was going to say fun, but it's not always fun.
No, it's not really usually fun, actually. Right? Has it ever been fun?
Very limited amounts of fun.
Yeah. Small bursts here and there.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really blame Percy for not having the time to do those things, but the Annabeth Chase in me is very disappointed in him for doing that. This was an extremely short chapter, really, really short, but also weirdly felt very necessary to me because I think it was really important to see him return to his normal everyday life, because that's sort of what this book is about, this, like, juxtaposition between his mortal and demigod lives and how he balances them. And a lot of times when we see him in the other books, we're seeing the demigod side. Like, we might start off in the mortal world with him at school, and then the demigod life takes him out of school and he has to go off on his adventure. And this was almost like the opposite. Like, yes, we started in the mortal world, but we also returned to the mortal world at the end. And it was just a good reminder that he's still, like, a regular kid a lot of the times and has to do regular kid things, like go to English class and take quizzes and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things about this story and seeing them fit this quest in amongst their daily lives. Like, you know, they went on different parts of this quest days apart from each other because it wasn't like, oh, we have this distinct, you know, due date and it's 3 days away and we have to save the entire world. Like, again, they were able to say, well, we'll do that tomorrow when none of us have class. We'll do it in the morning, you know, whatever. I liked kind of the mundaneness of that, of yeah. being able to plan to do this quest at certain times and in certain places. So, yeah, it was nice to have a chapter where, you know, we see Percy with Eudora kind of finishing that portion of this story, giving her a little, you know, head tilt and walk off stage. Mm-hmm. But then also to see Percy, yeah, go back to English class, and everyone in that class sees him as just that kid. Like, mm-hmm. they have no idea that just that morning he had snuck up to Olympus and was under the table at Zeus's feast. Like, nobody knows that. Yeah. And so it is kind of nice to see him in both worlds in this chapter, basically.
Yeah,
in
the last
two chapters.
Really, he's, you know, talking to a mythological creature one minute, and he's in English class hoping he doesn't get called on because he didn't do the reading in the next.
Right.
And, like, for a character that we already know and love, that we've spent so much time with, these, like, slice-of-life moments, I think, hit really hard because it really rounds out the character and makes him more than just the hero of these stories. Kind of makes him, like, a real person who's, like, doing things that we've done in our past, you
yep.
know? Not me, because I always read, but, you know, Kristen, for example.
Occasionally me. Yep. Even occasionally me.
My favorite line was when Eudora asks him, tell me the truth. Did you want to take the chalice? Like, even just for a split second. And Percy responds, the truth? I said, I wasn't tempted a bit. And it's true. Like, I mean, I truly believe him because we're in his head this entire book. But this has been repeated multiple times throughout the book. And also we've talked about it multiple times, but I think it was just like worth highlighting again. He really wasn't tempted and he had his reasons, and those reasons are very sound. Mm-hmm. Like, they're very genuine and true to himself, which is what I love.
Yeah. And like, his reasons for not being tempted include that image of him and Grover and Annabeth hanging out at old age on a porch somewhere, just taking a breather, you know, thinking back on all their adventures and craziness. Like,
yeah,
that's more tempting to him than any immortal possibilities. And it just goes to the heart of who Percy is. So.
Yeah, definitely. What was your favorite line?
Mine was between Eudora and Percy. Surprise, surprise. And Eudora says, so, tell me about it. I heard you got Ganymede's letter. And Percy says, it's kind of a do-it-yourself letter, but yeah. And I liked the explanation of, yeah, it's kind of a do-it-yourself letter. Here, you can look at the pretty paper.
Yeah.
Then she gets all crazy about how pretty the paper is. So yeah, it was cute.
Yeah. My favorite moment was Percy digging around for the only blue Jolly Rancher in the jar, and his little bit of, like, the bitter line about, like, she obviously didn't know me very well. She didn't know which one I was, you know, trying to find, which I feel like just goes back to, like, Rick's supposed, like, weird hatred for guidance counselors and the fact that they probably don't know the students very well and stuff. He's got a vendetta, and you cannot tell me otherwise.
It certainly shows here. Yeah. There was one blue one left, and Percy dug through the whole jar to get to the one blue one.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, to be fair, I would too. I like the green ones. I like most Jolly Ranchers, but blues, I feel like they're kind of special.
I was going to say the green apple, I think, are my favorite, but I'm not Percy Jackson.
Yeah.
So it's okay. We're allowed to have different favorites.
What was your favorite moment?
I liked Eudora basically offering to flush Percy. She says something like, you know, I can, and he just goes, I'll walk.
Yeah.
And I just liked it because it is a nice little, like, it takes you almost full circle back to their first meeting where he had no idea what was coming, really, and then he's flushed, and
yeah.
he really didn't like that. So,
yeah.
Also, why flush him back to class? It's down the hall. Like,
yeah.
It would be one thing if he had to go across town.
It would be, like, how would you explain that anyway?
Exactly.
Like, it'd be so weird.
Exactly.
But yeah, he was very insistent throughout this very short chapter, which is saying something.
Yeah.
Multiple times was like, I am not getting flushed again.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'll get flushed in the next book.
Right? It would be.
He's got to at least once. I feel like that would just be.
Like, all right, just one more time. Like,
or she catches him off guard again and he's like, oh no.
Consider yourself flushed. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really, really appreciate it. You can leave us questions, comments, or ideas for any content you want to hear from us in any of these places, including telling us all about your TV habits or all the fun things we talk about at the top of every show. We do have one bit of feedback this week. We got an email from friend of the podcast, Kuivna. She's talked to us a couple of times via email, so I will throw it to Karen for this one.
Yes, I was so excited when Kuivna messaged us because we haven't heard from you in a while, and you are a friend of the podcast. Your letters are always amazing. Did you open the email like I...
I did not because okay. I was afraid because our email hates me sometimes.
It does.
Yeah.
But this is a necessary component to this email.
Should I open the email?
Okay. So Kuivna said, "Hey guys, I'm so glad you are back. I miss the podcast so much. Here are a few things I wanted to let you guys know about. First of all, I'm so excited for Onyx Storm and I can't wait to read it. It's €12 on Kindle and €19 in paperback, which I think are crazy prices. So I'm going to get it from my local library. Awesome job. Love libraries.
Definitely.
I just finished an exam week and I have a week off school, so it would be good to read then. Also, I don't know if you guys like The Hunger Games, but I love it. Maybe even more than Percy Jackson." That's blasphemy. No, I'm just kidding. That's awesome. "I can't wait for the new book to come out in March. I'm so excited. I just finished rereading the first series and am currently rereading Heroes of Olympus. I paused to read Wrath of the Triple Goddess, though, as I only found out it had come out in December. So after rereading the first series all January, I finished it recently. I won't give any spoilers, but I absolutely loved it, and I think it's even better than Chalice of the Gods." That makes me really excited.
Same.
"Anyway, I hope you are both doing well. Love the podcast so much. Keep it up. Also, here are two photos of my dog, Gemma, because I think she's really cute."
Aww.
"And your dog is super cute."
Oh.
Right? Now you see why I told you to open the email.
Oh, look at the baby.
The puppy dog eyes in the first one, honestly, even the second one, like, I mean, does she get everything that she asks for? Because I would give her everything she
absolutely
asks for.
Spoil that pup. Oh,
so cute.
And I also really like those sheets. Those are cute.
I know. I was looking at them too.
The tigers stand out.
Tiger sheets.
They're really cute.
Yeah.
But no, your pupper is so cute.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
I'll probably post a picture of Callie on Instagram, too, because I took a picture of her begging me while we were recording. She hasn't been in here in a while, which I find slightly suspicious. She either gave up or she's causing a ruckus in the other room.
Or she's hungry. My only other thought is maybe she was hungry.
I saw her right before you got here, so it wasn't that. She just wanted attention.
Also, I am also really excited for the new Hunger Games book. Mm. I did not read Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes because I do not care to know more about President Snow.
That's how I felt,
maybe
too.
Sometime in my life, I will want to know the whole story because I'm sure it's a good story. I have nothing against.
And the movie came out, too, right?
Yes, which I have not seen.
Which, like, I mean, that just...
Yeah.
I don't know. That was all a blur for some
it was.
Reason.
It was a little chaotic.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I do not, you know, anybody who wanted that story or loves that story, like, no harm to you. I just could not read anything about President Snow at the moment. But I am really excited for Haymitch's book.
Oh, it's Haymitch?
It's Haymitch's Games.
Oh.
Because it's Sunrise on the Reaping.
I thought that it was, like, the first ever Hunger Games.
I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be Haymitch's story.
Okay.
And, like, his games and what went on.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued by that because I've always wanted to know, like, Haymitch's actual story.
Right.
Because there's just so much mystery around what exactly happened to him before, you know, all of that. And there's a lot of parallels between him and Katniss, and that's why he gets so invested in her. Mm-hmm. So I am very, very much looking forward to Sunrise on the Reaping as well. So
I do like the Hunger Games. When that first came out and when the movies were coming out, I was all in. I think because of the political climate here now, I am less all in because we are living in the capital. I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, but that's very much how it feels a lot of the times. So it's a little bit too close to home for me.
Yeah.
But I think the world that Suzanne Collins created is so rich, and there are so many stories you really could tell, that even the little things that, like, were the stepping stones toward the revolution that Katniss created, those would be so interesting to go back and read. So
everything that's going on in the districts while you know, Catching Fire is going on, mm-hmm. because the first book, while they're there, like, it's all, you know, normal day by day normal stuff because the revolution hadn't really kicked in yet. But, like, when she goes back for the Quarter Quell, like, there's so much going on that, yeah, I would be fascinated to learn what was going on in any of the districts at that time.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a really awesome world. Mm. And, you know, good for her for still finding inspiration to write in that world. And, you know, she said a lot of really great things with the first trilogy, so I am excited at some point to get back into it.
And that's what's great about books. They will be there.
Yes.
Waiting for you when you're in a headspace where that will not be a problem.
Yes.
So we love that. So, yeah. All the books, all the reading. Love it so much. Okay, so next time we will be discussing Chalice of the Gods chapters 34 and 35. Looking forward to that, because it'll be the end of Chalice of the Gods.
Yes. I'm
no
very
promises
excited.
Where we're going after that. I know we had talked about finishing things.
I think we're going to do the Red Pyramid.
Yeah.
I'm
and then go
sure.
back to Triple Goddess?
I think so.
Okay.
Because we're halfway through Red Pyramid.
We are.
I feel like we gotta finish it.
We are. And I am interested to finish that.
Yeah.
Like, I am very intrigued, and I have to remember where we are. I have to go back and read a couple chapters. But, yeah, so
We'll probably do a little roundup, like, refresher like we did at the beginning of this one. And
solid plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. But until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.
Are you enjoying this conversation?
She must be.
She's so needy today.